A lot of time in the last couple of shiurim discussing some of the dinim derabban and makbapatish, particularly those areas that fall into the general category of a nirik misakin. Already pointed out several times that in order to be makbapatish derais, it has to be a physical improvement, but it could still be a violation of makbapatish midrabban if it just gives off the impression, even spiritual, even just in a ruchniastic way, that the item is quote unquote broken, but fixing it, that would pose a potential problem. So we spent a lot of time the past couple of weeks talking about Tevilas Kalim and then about Afreshi Tumas and Maisris and Afreshi Schala, all the above. There's one last akuda that I want to speak about. It actually goes a little bit closer throwback to the Tevilas Kalim, but it's really part of this entire picture of all these assorted Yisum Derabanan that fall under the potential category of Mechse Kimisakim. So it doesn't appear in the Gemara explicitly, unlike all the other examples that we spoke about, which are actually Gemaras. It's a discussion in the Rishonim, but the Rishonim are building off of some of the things that do appear in the Gemara explicitly. And that's the issue not of titling Kalim, but of actually kashering Kalim. If a Kli is treif, so then is one permitted to kasher, under what circumstances one would be permitted to kasher? So the truth is that this entire discussion is probably not even relevant at all in terms of a Shabbos. Because just practically speaking, how in the world do you get water heated up and kashering and fires and that kind of stuff just doesn't bode well for Shabbos. But it is a real possibility in Yom Tov, because some of the things that are involved in the kashering process, whether it's the lighting of the fires and the heating up water and that kind of stuff, under certain circumstances, would actually be mutter in terms of Balechas Yom Tov. So the discussion in the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch about kashering is really more of a Yom Tov topic than a Shabbos topic. But again, as we've seen so many times, that the overlap between Shabbos and Yom Tov is definitely great. Amen Shabbos and Yom Tov, Ella Echonav Shabbat. So a lot of the clones that we talked about in the past are going to spill over to the Shal of Kasher and Caleb on Yom Tov. So let's just take a few minutes just to familiar ourselves with some of the clones here and kind of almost like round that, round off the entire picture of Mechsek and Misakin. So from even though, as we mentioned, that the Gemara doesn't talk explicitly about the permissibility, lack thereof, of kashering kalim and shabbos and yotiv, our initial reaction would be that it's probably almost a little bit worse than tovelin kalim. Because when it came to tevilas kalim, so yes, the Mishnah speaks about tovelin kalim, which a tummy is being problematic, because of Mechsikim Misakin, whether or not that carries over to our tevilas kalim was a loaded question. We spent a lot of time on that a couple of weeks ago. And we said that according to many Rishonim, there really is no issa, there really is no prohibition of tovelin kalim on shabbos and yotiv. Because when you have a kli that you bought from a non-Jew, although you're not supposed to use it, it's not broken. And proof positive that it's not broken, if you went ahead by mistake and used it, it wouldn't trafe up the food. So unlike a kli tame that will make the food tame, a kli shalo nitvol for the mitzvah to his kalim will not negatively impact on the food. But that, notwithstanding that, our minhag is still, we don't do it because maybe they still call the tikkun. But that svar, that kula l'chalek, is going to come back to haunt us now when it comes to kasher and kalim, because kasher and kalim is a treif. So the answer is yes, it may impact on the kasher of the food. It's very possible the food that's cooked in a non-kosher kli may actually be treif. Now, that's also a loaded question that we spoke a little bit about also in the past, that we spoke a lot about this last year in the chulin shurim, that there is a distinction whether the kli is within 24 hours of usage of treif or not. If it's within 24 hours, then it's what's called the nosen tam l'shevach, then any taste inside the walls of the kli still tastes good, and it can, in fact, and trafe up the resulting food you cook. If it's a nosen tam l'gam, so under most circumstances, barring spicy and onions and things like that, it's probably not going to have all that much impact with the other. But at least sometimes, at least the kli that's what's called the keder basyom, within 24 hours of using it for trafe, will pose a very, very serious problem for the resulting food, a potential problem derisa for the resulting food. And therefore, one could argue that the kasha such a kli would be a problem, would pose a concern of mechsek misakin. So that's the starting point of our discussion. So the baseline of the Rishonim is that you can't kasha kalim, bein b'shabbos, bein b'yomtiv. Again, Shabbos can be hard to figure out how to do it anyway, practically. But bein b'shabbos, bein b'yomtiv, because of the concern of mechsek misakin. However, just as we found last week, Mechsek Misakin can be overridden if there's a way almost to explain it away. If you see somebody doing something and it doesn't give off that impression of Mechsek Misakin, if it doesn't give off that impression of mechzik and mezaken, if we can explain away what the person's doing as some kind of activity that's permissible on yontif, then the issa doesn't apply. That was the whole source why tefillas other is permissible. There are kemekos, cooling off, like we spoke about berichas last week. And the truth is, even within tefillas kelim deitumah, the Gemara has the possibility that, let's say, if a person has a type of a kli that, in theory, he could be filling up with water. He's not toiling it. He has a glass, and he wants to go to the mikvah and fill up the glass to drink the mikvah water. So we'll make it a clean spring in underground. Make it a nice. Can bring yourself to drink the water of the Kedemik. So the Gemara says that in theory, if a person can do it in such a way that it doesn't give off the impression that you're toiling it, then it's okay. Okay, the whole thing is only Midrabbanan. So it's a Nira Kimisakein. If it's not Nira Kimisakein, then it's not going to be Mutter. So the Rishon invoked that imagery when it comes to Kasher and Kalim as well. Sometimes you can kasher a kalim in a manner that doesn't give off that terrible impression that you're kashering it. So let's say, for example, you take a kli and you throw it into a big, big pot of water. So why do you think a person is throwing that kli into the pot of water? With the olden days, that's how they used to wash dishes. The Rishonim described in Maseches Chulin about the basic dishwashing was you had a big, giant pot and you threw the little things, the little dishes and silverware in the smaller pots into the big pot. That's how you wash your dishes. So if you see a person taking kalim and throwing it into a big cauldron of water, it doesn't necessarily give off the impression that you're kashering it. Maybe you can explain away that you're just simply washing it. So the Rishonim, yeah, that would be okay. That would technically be okay. One could raise a question whether that svar would work bisman hazeh. I mean, that's true in the good old days, you have dishwashers, you have sinks, you have normal running water. So it was very, very difficult to actually wash dishes. So that was the method of washing dishes. If you see a guy taking a fork and tossing it into a giant boiling, bubbling pot, and jumping away, the odds that you think that he's washing his dishes are very unlikely. He is most probably kashrim. Here's the kalim. So again, I'm not sure whether the heter of nira kemediach as kalim is going to apply. But then the Rishonim go further and say that even if we can somehow come up with a solution to this problem, that the throwing the tray for fork into the pot of boiling water can be ignored because it doesn't give off that terrible impression of kashering. It could be kind of subsumed under the category of nirake, washing your dishes. But there's another problem. How did you get the hot water in the first place? So, What gave you the ability to heat up water? Gave you the ability to yontif? Are not allowed to heat up water in yontif? Well, not so simple. You're allowed to cook water in yontif if you want to make yourself a cup of tea. That's okay. You want to heat up water, you want to make a soup in yontif, that's okay. You want to have hot water for other purposes, we have to be very, very careful what those other purposes are. So here, what do you mean? It's echol nefesh. Because if I don't kasher my fork, I won't have a fork to eat with, I won't be able to eat. If I don't kasher my pot, I won't have a pot to cook with, I won't be able to eat. So shouldn't we call that echol nefesh? So the answer is no. That's what we call machshirei echol nefesh. Machshirei echol nefesh is an important principle in Uchaz Yontif that it basically describes doing malacha to an item that's going to assist you, it's going to enable you to eat down the line. But you're not using this item to eat itself. Let's say the mushroom, like we already discussed in the end of the Beitza, a person wants to prepare a knife on Yontif in order to shech. I'm not eating the knife. I eat the animal. So the act of shechita itself that I'm doing to the animal, that's called echol nefesh. The working on the knife is called machshiri echol nefesh. Well, let's say, for example, my refrigerator. I want to fix my fridge on Yontif. I'm not going to eat the refrigerator, but if my refrigerator isn't working, so all the food in the fridge is going to spoil. So that's called machshirei echol nefesh. What's the din? Are you allowed to do machshirei echol nefesh or not? So that was a big machlekes atanoim. So if you, according to the view of the Chachamim, all machshirei echol nefesh is off limits. This was just in Daf Yomi, it's very, very recently, that the pasuk says, achashir echol nefesh, hu levado yeyaseh lochem. So hula bado, it sounds like a meal. It means only this is mutter, but nothing else. So come to Chacham and say, hula bado, hu v'lo machshirav. That means echol nefesh you're allowed to do, but you're not allowed to do machshirav echol nefesh. So I'm allowed to shech because I'm going to eat the animal, but I'm not allowed to fix the knife. I'm allowed to let's say cook the soup because I'm going to eat the soup, but I'm not allowed to fix the pot. That's called machshir echon. That's the view of the Chachamim. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says that there's almost like a contradiction in the psukim, because on the one hand the Torah says hu levado, which teaches us hu v'lo machshira. On the other hand, the Torah concludes by saying, yeah, selochem, whatever you want. It's a green light. Whatever you have to do, selochem, whatever is necessary is good to go. So what is it? Is the Torah limiting our ability to prepare for food by hu v'lo machshirov? Or is the Torah saying, lachem? Lachem means to include everything. The reader says it depends. If it's machshirin she'ev shemibiyo yom versus machshirin she'ev shemibiyo yom. If it's machshirin that you could have taken care of yesterday, let's say, for example, I have a knife. The knife was broken yesterday, and I could have sharpened it yesterday. I could have fixed it before Yantar, but I ain't getting around to it. That's called Machshirin She'ev Shalasos B'Biyod Yom. So Rabbi Yehuda concedes that those would be also Min HaTorah. However, what if I dropped the knife today? So if I dropped the knife today, I couldn't fix it yesterday because the phrase, it ain't broken, don't fix it. It's hard to fix the knife. It's not broken yet. So it was E'ev Shalasos B'Biyod Yom. It's E'ev Shalasos B'Biyod Yom. That's covered by the pasuk of Lachem, L'Rabos HaFilu Machshirin. So whereas according to the Chachamim, everything is off limits, all Machshirin Rasa, only Yochan Nefesh proper is Mutter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Yesh V'Yesh, you have to judge case by case, depending on whether it's Ev B'Biyod Yom versus E'ev B'Biyod Yom. How do we paskin Halacha? That's a very, very loaded question. The Gemara Maseches Beit tells us that this falls into a very strange category of Pesach Halacha. It's called Halacha V'Ein Morin Kain. But technically speaking, we follow Rabbi Yehuda, which is really a chiddush. Normally, Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabban, usually Rabbi Yehuda loses out to the majority of the Chachamim. So this is the Yaitzim in a cloud. This is an exception to the rule. So we follow the view of Rabbi Yehuda that Machshirin Shet, E'ev Shir, maybe Yod Yomar, in fact, Mutter, but the Ein Morin Kain. But you're not supposed to tell this to people. Why? Because if you tell them, oh, no, I'm this, people are going to get very, very mezalzel. Give them a finger, they can take a hand. You have to be very, very careful. Even sometimes there are things that are Mutter to do, but you have to. When you're passing shilas, you have to know shiva psychology, or a lot of psychology. You have to know, if you're passing something, you have to know what people are going to do with that psach. So if people are going to go with that psach and run, and there's alza, and they're going to lead to all kinds of other things that are really also, and the rav has to know where they went to step back, you have to be careful. Not everything that's mutter are you supposed to tell people. You have to be careful. On the other hand, you're not supposed to misrepresent halacha. You're not supposed to create, you know, wild chumras and gzeiras and siyagim to make life impossible for people. So Chazal had to work very, very hard on this. And each rav has to work hard on this. You have to know. Sometimes you say certain things and you don't say certain things. But as I always say, there's a science in basking psach halacha, and then there's an art of psach halacha. You know, science is you have to know what's the din. You have to know exactly what the every last sifkotun is. Then there's a certain art, and you have to know when it's appropriate to invoke certain kulas, when it's appropriate to invoke certain chumras, v'yesh v'yesh. So that's what Chazal did also. So Allah came, they thought that this was the ikra din, say like it is, the ikra din, it's mutter. But there's no great mitzvah to go tell people, and therefore Allah came. That's what the Gemara tells, a fascinating story, that one of them, a Roim, had his knife, his shechita knife, got broken on Yontav itself. So the din is you're allowed to fix it. You know, that's called Machshir Echol Nefesh. You're allowed to go ahead. Otherwise, it would be a violation of Machmir Patish. That's okay. It's Machshir Echol Nefesh. But one of his Tamidim saw him sharpening the knife. So he asked the Rebbe, what are you doing? You're sharpening a knife and you're not. So the Rebbe could have said, yeah, it's a knife that fell and broke. But he thought that would be a violation of Halach Be'Merikim. Even though that was a great Tamachachim he was speaking of. One of his Tamidim, one of the Amorim. So he said, no, I'm not really sharpening it. I'm just rubbing it. It got a little dirty. I'm just you know, wiping it off a little bit. I'm not really sharpening it. So says, why did he say that? Because he had no choice. He had to say a little bit of something not 100% true. Because it was Leis Breder, because Halacha Be'Merikim came. Because otherwise, that would have led to a zilzul potential in the Chaz Yontif. It would have been a violation of the klal of Halacha Be'Merikim. So back to this story. So we're assuming everything we're saying here is not a hora. We're just learning the sukkah together. So not a lovely American. Otherwise, I have to say shir on the mechsuk mashir. So everyone has such. I'm going to be mezalzel on the halacha. So we're going to say it like it is. So the ikra din is that it's really mutter. So come to Rishayim and explain that if a person knows the din, so then if the fork became treif on yontif itself, so then it's yev shuviyod yom. You couldn't have kashed it before yontif because it wasn't treif yet. Then you're allowed to actually heat up the water. You can boil up the water in order to kasher the clay. That would not be permissible. If the fork became treif yesterday, So then all bets are off. Then you could have kashered it yesterday. Since you could have kashered it already yesterday, that's called EF Shibi Biyal Yom, and therefore you have no right in that Torah to heat up the water. So you have to be careful. Whenever you're kashering Kalim, you have to ask yourself two questions. Number one, is this a problem in the Rabbanon of Nira Kimisakin? That's a loaded question. That's going to depend on the reality, just how much of an imagery of Nira Kimisakin is it giving off. And then number two, even if you get somewhere around, finagle around that problem, you have to be practical. You get yourself a pot of water. How do you get yourself a pot of water unless you can heat it up? So are you allowed to heat it up? So that's going to depend whether it's Makshir Mibiyod Yom or Yevshir Mibiyod Yom. Things are going to get thrown off a little bit this man, yeah, because we have a practice that we try not to kasha kelim which are b'nei yomim. That's because of a technical problem in terms of hilchos kashrus. We spoke a lot about this last year in Chulin Shirim, that there's a din when you kasha something through hagol, through hot water, so you're always running a risk of retrafing it up. Because if you think about it, what happens is that the whatever blee is, whatever taste is absorbed inside the walls of the fork, inside the walls of the pot, inside the walls of the spoon, whatever it was, so they come out into the water and then they go right back again into the kli. So my honey later, what did you accomplish? It was trade, it's fight the trade. So there are two basic ways to get around that problem. So one way to get around the problem is if you have a lot of water in the pot, you threw your fork in, so then whatever trade is going to come out of the fork, it's going to become both a mashishim, and then when they go back into the pot, so they're all bottled, they're already negated. But that's not always practical. Sometimes I can't do that. So then there's another eight, and that is the kli is in a binyomo. If the fork, the akashri, was ready more than 24 hours, so then technically, whatever comes out of that fork, it becomes a nosen tam of gam. And when it goes back in again, it's called nosen tam of gam meikara, and it doesn't really trape up the fork the second time. Kozman, the original blia was l'shevach, and he originally took the middle fork, spoke into the flesh or something, so then there was an original blia that tasted good. That poses a problem. But once that blia becomes bad, I still can't rely on it. I still have to kasher it. But if I get it out and it goes back in again, and the first time it goes back in, I mean, the first time, the second time it goes back in again, that's called the tchilas blia lefgam, and that's going to be permissible. So practically speaking, we try not to kasher kelim within 24 hours anyway. So the odds of a guy trafing up something in the morning and yontem and kashering it today in the afternoon is between 0 and 0. So it's not going to happen too often because of all that different hugging and chumras and nice looking and chumras kashering, it's just not going to happen. So again, a lot of this is halacha below the mice. But the principles are important principles. The principle of you have to ask yourself two questions. You have to always ask yourself, is it a problem that the rabbanon of Mexican is sakin? That may not be true. And then even if you can get over that hump, then you have to deal with the practical question, how can I heat up the water if I can, based on the issues of makshir. We should then go one step further and talk about what if I have a kli that I'm not going to kasha through Hagala, I'm going to kasha through Libun. That's a whole different ballgame. Libun means that I have to mamish heat up the kli in the fire itself. So am I allowed to do that? Am I allowed to take a kli and mamish put it into the fire itself? That's a whole nother loaded question. I'm heating up metal, I'm going to make the metal glow. It's a chamalach, a lot of potential issues going on. So basically, what the Rishonim explained to us is as follows. That it depends to the degree of how much Liban you're planning on doing. There are actually two different kinds of Liban. Liban appears in the Mishnah, in the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah. It has its source in the Pasuk in Chumash called the Varshe Yavova Esh Taviva Esh V'Taher. If you have a kli that had a blia in fire, let's say you have a barbecue grill you used by mistake for something like kosher, you bought from a goy, so it was used for chazer. So now you want to kasher it, that's okay, you can do that. You have to mamish throw it into the fire called the Varshe Yavova Esh Taviva Esh V'Taher. So that's real Liban. Then there's a secondary kind of a Liban. But the Rishonim coined the phrase Libun Kal. That principle doesn't appear in the Gemara. Libun Kal means that it's not going to be in the fire so hot. It's going to be exposed to a flame, but it's not going to be so super duper duper hot. The Gemara says in the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah that in order to kasher something with real Libun, something that really, really requires Libun, it's got to get so hot that you need Nitzitzis Nitzin, the sparks are flying and then the klippas are peeling, the outermost part of the klippas, it was like melting away and peeling away. You're talking about really, really serious degree of heat in order to be a bona fide libun. But then we should say, what if you have a kli that really doesn't even require libun? It really just requires hagola. It just has to be put into hot water because it's blia happened through water, but it's not so easy. You can't find a kli big enough. It's not so posh. You can make a mess. So you want to do a libun instead. So the Rishonim said you could do a libun. Libun is better than a mel. Well, a kli that requires libun, you can't do a gola on, but vice versa, you can. But when you have a kli that doesn't really require an absolute libun, it's really hagolatik kli, then you can get away with what's called libun kal. Libun kal means you have to expose it to fire, but it doesn't have to get so hot. How hot does it have to get? It's got to get completely atzelet as well. It's got to get pretty hot, but you wouldn't want to touch that metal. You know, it's got to get to the top to bottom of the kli atzelet as well. But again, it doesn't have to get to 900 degrees. It doesn't have to get to the point of the shear of libun gavah. So come to Rishon and say, if you want to kasha something on yontif that requires libun gomor, so that's already too much. That looks like you're kashering. No one would ever think that you're doing anything else of a kashering. But if you're doing something that only requires a libun kal anyway, you could argue you're just heating up the pan. It's normal to heat up pans. You want to cook, you want to heat up something in the pan, so to put the pan on the fire for a little bit to get a little bit hot. That's not so crazy. That doesn't give off that terrible impression of mechzer kibisachin. So again, the same thing we find by Hagolan, by Tiflis Kalim, and so many different areas of this gezeira de rabbanon. You have to always ask yourself, does it look bad or not? And if it looks like a tikkun, then it's a problem. If it doesn't look like a tikkun, then it's okay. So each stage of kasher, each different method of kasher, you have to ask the question. Again, on ma'isa, no one's going to do any of this today. Nobody's kashering kelim on yontif as man as that. But in the olden days, the guy had one kli, had one pot. So when it got treif, it was a big trouble. As man as that, baruch Hashem, we all have more than one pot. No one's ready to go kashering kelim.
Louis, it's true, though, that you did have to do libun kal. Would it be better if you did it while you were cooking? Meaning, if something else was already cooking in the oven at the same time, so would it be better? Then you could say the whole issue about ochel nefesh is it tzarech or not a tzarech?
Right. So that issue of
in the same oven and then you stick something.
Right. 100% right. So whatever, again, there are always these two questions you have to ask yourself. There's a problem there are bottom mechzek the sakin, and there's a problem there are ice potential to melachas. So the same thing we said before, that I can't turn on the fire, I can't heat up the fire, I can't, you know, even if my oven's on a little bit, I can't raise the fire in order to do kashering. It's kashering, unless it was something that we came treif today, kashering is always going to be a problem. But again, we're focusing more on the other issue. You're right, 100% right, that you have to always ask yourself both of those questions.
No, I'm saying if something was, meaning, does it take away the issue that we were talking about earlier, that if it's already cooking, right? If let's say you're allowed to cook on yontif, so you're cooking something, you're cooking food, and you happen to want to do libun kal on a different kli that you want to be
mashed. You want to throw it in the oven.
At the same time, does that lessen the problem? Even if according to the svar, then maybe it's still a bit of a problem because you're already cooking. So it doesn't look, it's not mechse at all because you're already cooking. You already have another pot in the oven that's cooked.
Right. Okay. Maybe. You don't get it. If it's just a libun kal, so that we shouldn't say putting a pot in the oven doesn't really look a libun kal. Right. That's the svar they quote from the Mordechai. That doesn't give off such a surprise. Right.
Do we have any problem thinking that mehzekim taken, it might be very subjective, that everybody who is looking something else different, not everybody. We know that 100 people sit in one room, they right, see right, one act, they right, can explain
right,
it.
Right, it's hard to make that call. You know, Chazal themselves raised that question with. We spoke about last week about the person who's going to the mikveh in the cold weather. Is that called mechzekim zaken? Not mechzekim zaken. You know, I'm toveling my pot and the mikveh. You're right. It gets a little bit tricky. I don't know. I mean, Chazal gave us certain guidelines. The Rishonim Shulchanoch try to extend those guidelines a little bit. You're right. Anyways, this is still the shirayim of last week. We're still in the sugya mapapat. You know, we're still there. We still have a while to go. But I wanted to move in just at least to the beginning of the next part of Makom HaPatish, which is also a derabbanan aspect of Makom HaPatish, but it's a very, very different kind of derabbanan. When we deal with derabbanans in Ucha Shabbos, so there are some derabbanans that are outright gezeiros in the sense of don't do X because doing X is going to lead you to doing Y. Then you had other kind of gezeiros that they're not really gezeiros, they're the nira, you know, the nira kimisakes. It gives off the wrong impression. This doesn't look like this is not what you're supposed to be doing on Shabbos, those kinds of Yisurim. But now we're moving into the category, the first category, if it's a gezeira, mamshus shabbos, usiyah bo teira. Don't do this because you make up to do that. What does that mean? Don't do activity X, Y, and Z because shema yavo l'sakin kli. By doing such and such, you may come to fix something. What you're doing now is not a tikkun. What you're doing now is a hetagomor. But there's a chance that if you do these kinds of activities, so then it's going to lead down the line to a real malacha. So this is a more classic kind of a gezeira. So this is a sugya that appears at the very end of Maseches Eruvin, where the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about the shaila as follows. The issur, potential issur of mashmiya kol, making noise, person doing some kind of a device that's going to cause noise to be made. So that's an issur called mashmiya kol. And what's so terrible about mashmiya kol? What's the terrible mashmiya kol? So the parashat shot, the issur of mashmiya kol is a gezeira shem yisach and klishir. We're afraid that usually the mashmiya kols that you're doing are some kinds of instruments. So even though, if you think about it, you know, objectively, what's wrong with playing the piano on Shabbos and Yom? What's wrong with playing the drums? What's wrong with playing the guitar? What malacha is about? No malacha is about. The only problem is that anytime I play a musical instrument, so there's always that fear that it may break, very common would break, and shem yisach and klishir. So all mashmiya calls, any kind of making any kind of a music, kind of a rhythm, and notes, anything like that, is all included in this isser of gezeira shema yisach and klishir. That seems to be the isser of mashmiya calls. However, it's not 100% clear that is even really, that we're even learning the right malacha, we're even learning the right sugi right now. So yes, there's an issur of mashmiya kol, but the Gemara in the end of it, as Erevin quotes a machlekes amarayim about the parameters of this issur, and depending on what you think this issur is all about, is going to go all the way back to what the source of the issur was in the first place. So the Gemara quotes a machlekes as follows. The Gemara says that if a mashmiya kol, in a way, in a musical manner, make it a little tune out of something. So even if it's not an absolute formal instrument, let's say, I'm banging, banging like to rhythm, to the beat or something. So that would be a problem of shema yisach klishir. Because all kind of musical instruments and quasi-noise, anything in the musical world is a fear of shema yisach klishir. What if I want to knock on the door? So I just do it. I'm not making a music, I'm not making a note, I'm not making a sound, I'm making a sound, but I'm not being mashmiya kol shel zimra, shel shiros v'tish b'chals. So what's the issue with that? So the Gemara quotes machlokes, but there's any issue with that? So there's one opinion in the Gemara that says, that's a problem, you're not allowed to be mashmiya kol. Anything and everything you do that makes noise on Shabbos and Yom Tov is awesome. It doesn't matter whether it's a musical noise or not. And the other opinion says, no, as long as it's not a musical noise, it's okay. So what's the shy, what's the issue? So the Yosemech explains, Machlokes is, what's wrong with making noise in the first place? So if you present the prohibition of making noise, like we said, that it's an isser of it's part of the general prohibition against an extension of not playing instruments, because instruments are music, and music is shem yisach klishir in that whole picture. So then I understand why there's nothing wrong with knocking on the door on Shabbos. I'm allowed to make noise, I'm sitting here, then I'm banging on the door. If I bang to musical tune, that would pose a problem. But there's one day in the Gemara says, no, you can just bang on the door. According to that day, you can't bang on the door. You got to scream loud in order to some of the hear you. Not yet. The Gemara tells a story that one of the Amoraim was machmer like that he wouldn't bang on the door on Shabbos and Yom Tov. He would only scream to his. So one time he came home on Friday night, his wife forgot to sleep, his kids were sleeping. So he screamed, nobody heard him. He didn't want to bang on the door, even though it wasn't musical. He was of the opinion that even non-musical is also. The Gemara says he had no choice. He slept in the street. slept in the street that night, that Friday night, rather than violently. What he thought was the issue there, but we would possibly, there's nothing wrong with banging as loud as you want. He held up anything that you're doing to cause any kind of noise is the problem. So what's the source of that issue? If it's not the Rabbanan Dik Gzeira to Makwa Patish or to Masakin, what's the problem? So the issue may be a different issue of the Gamrei. This may be part of the general prohibition of the Rabbanan called molid of a chodesh. We spoke about this a lot in the past. You're not allowed to bring new things into existence at Shabbos and Yom Tov. Even though there's no malacha per se involved, just the very new forces, the new items, new entities are a problem. What's called a new entity? What's called a new thing? So there is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos that speaks about crushing ice on Shabbos. You're not allowed to crush ice on Shabbos to get the water, to get it to drink as water. But there's a big machlokes to show with the problem. So some Rishonim say, Rashi says it's a problem of molid of a chodesh. Because it used to be ice and now it's water, even though in chemistry we know that ice and water are the same. It's both H2O, but solids and liquids are a little bit different. So even though the chemical bonds are the same, but they look different, taste different, color, whatever it is. So they're different. So therefore that's called the molid of a chodesh. But that's an issa b'drabbanan. Rashi says, what's the issa b'drabbanan? It's not a gezeira or anything. It's almost like a malacha derabbanan, like you're creating. Shabbos is not a time to create. Stop this creating on Shabbos. So we have to stop our creating. So the real Torah definition of stopping creating is 39 melachas, melachas ha-mishkan. But Rabbanan, they threw on another one. That's not really a melacha, but it's dumb melacha. It's dumb melacha a little bit. It's a melada v'chodesh. Well, let's say the Gemara says in Beitza that you're not allowed to rub two sticks together, two stones together to make a fire in Yom Tov. Why not? I want to cook. What's the problem? So the pashas from the Gemara is that that's an issur d'rabbanan. Also, it's a melada v'chodesh. And even though the melacha of causing a fire is mutter, but creating something out from scratch is considered to be a problem. So we spoke about this a lot. We spoke about Avara. That's the reason why you're not allowed to turn on electric lights on Yom Tov. Even though I need the light, I want to read. What's the problem? You're allowed to light a candle on Yom Tov. When you turn on an electric light, that's a davar chadash. It's a motzi davar chadash. There are those who say that's the real issue of electricity. We spoke a little bit about this in the past. What malachas, what their ice is, what their abundance is, what's about electricity. So those who want to argue, if you have an electric appliance without a light, so then maybe it's not out of their ice, maybe it's only their abundant molid. So molid is something that we're familiar with. So says the Asameach, one madiyama holds, molid coal, molid a sound, making a new sound is also brought. You can't talk about you, you're not talking about you. It's making sound, that does work okay. But to make a sound using a device, using a kli, using your banging on the door, so one opinion says that's a problem. So if the reason for the issur is nothing to do with Shemi Sak and Kli Shir, then we understand why it's also, even if it's not the Derech Shir. So that's an important Shaila now. So what is it? What is the nature of this issur of making noise and jobs in Yom Tov? Is it a problem of the Rabbanan of Makam Apathish, Shemi Sak Kli Shir, or is it a problem of a molded coal and molded over chadar? So hopefully we'll mention next week. We'll have to pick up from this. How do we pass the halacha? It's pretty important for us. There's some serious nafkamina ladina knocking on doors. It's most important nafkamina. So we'll have to see hopefully next week where this takes us. Okay. Everyone, a good vach. Take care.